Welcome to the Bible Answer Man broadcast with your host, Hank Hanegraaff. The Bible Answer Man is the radio ministry of the Christian Research Institute, designed to equip believers to defend their faith and become true disciples of the Lord Jesus Christ, because life and truth matter. Our phone number is 888-7000-CRI. You can find us on the internet at equip.org. And now, to begin today's broadcast, here's Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you much, Randy. This is a special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Joe Dallas. He has a book titled Speaking of Homosexuality, discussing the issues with kindness and with clarity. Joe, good to have you back on the broadcast.
Great being here. Thank you, Hank.
A lot of people, Joe, will tell you that homosexuality is inborn, that sexual orientation cannot be changed, and because of that, they say, must be acceptable. God must have intended it to be that way. How do you respond?
Well, you can challenge both the accuracy of those statements at face value, and you can also challenge what they imply. And we talk about both of these in the book, the inborn argument and the immutability argument. I'm sure you know, Hank, that now more than ever, if something is repeated often enough in the 24-hour news cycle and in sound bites, we are in a time when people hear a good deal of information which goes unexamined. They tend not to look it up for themselves. And so a lot of people assume that it has been verified that homosexuality is inborn, when in fact it has not. It is still speculated. It is suggested. The scientific and medical communities are by no means in unanimous agreement that this is something that is inborn, and probably we will never find one single cause for homosexuality. Doctrinally, I believe it's one of many manifestations of fallen nature. Apart from that, we can only speculate on the many elements that create it, but it certainly hasn't been proven to be inborn. But the broader question is, even if something is inborn, does that alone legitimize it? Because some very good research has indicated that other tendencies, like the tendencies towards addictive behavior or depression or even violence, may have genetic or biological components to them. We surely would not legitimize those behaviors just because they may have inborn components. The same is true of the immutability argument. I think it depends on what you mean by immutable. When I repented of homosexuality, I repented of a behavior. I stopped the behavior. Believe me, if that was the only change in my life that happened, that would have been a ginormous change. When someone changes a behavior, which they have come to realize is wrong, that alone is sufficient, although not the only change available. It's certainly a very beneficial one. But it's also true that the less we express a desire, the less control that desire is going to have over us. So I think a lot of people put it in an either-or camp, and they say, okay, if you could stop the behavior, but you still ever have any temptations towards the behavior, you never changed at all. Which is nonsense if you think about it. If you used to beat people up, Hank, I know you didn't, but if you did, and you stopped doing it, but occasionally you still felt like punching somebody out, could any reasonable person really say you didn't change? Of course not. So I think both the inborn and immutability argument suggest that if something is deeply ingrained, it must have been ordained by God, and that bypasses the doctrinal truth that we are a fallen race, that many tendencies, desires, patterns are experienced by humans that God never meant them to experience. I mean, that's one of the major points of what we often call the curse when God told Adam and Eve, because of sin, you will now experience things I never meant you to experience. That alone cannot legitimize a behavior then. No matter what causes it, that is secondary to the thing itself. We go by a higher standard than origins when we determine whether something is right or wrong.
Joe, talk about the phobia word. That seems to be a conversation stopper. Homophobia, xenophobia, Islamophobia. The phobia word is in many ways another way of saying not just that you're afraid, but that you're a hater.
Yeah, it's very Orwellian, isn't it? It really harkens back to what George Orwell wrote about in 1984, the clever manipulation of language by the dominant political party, because if you can manipulate the meanings of words, you basically own the debate. One of the cleverest things we've done, or I think that people have done in this country, to promote a revision of our beliefs about sexual behavior is to first convince people that it is very hateful to object to homosexuality or to object to transsexualism. Therefore, the only people who object to it must be haters. Therefore, you don't just hold a belief that homosexuality is wrong. You are homophobic. Or you don't just hold the belief that transsexualism is wrong. You are transphobic. That way, if you are seen as someone who has a condition which makes you hateful and bigoted, you have no credibility. You have no credibility. You have no influence. So you've basically taken away the voices of people who object to homosexuality, not by reasoning with them, but by labeling them.
Joe, a lot of people will say Christians were wrong when it came to slavery. They were wrong when it came to racism. They were wrong when it came to gender. And therefore, it stands to reason that they're also wrong when it comes to the subject of same-sex sexuality. Talk about the difference between identity and behavior.
Yeah, it's not a very good comparison that they're making. First of all, we know from history, Hank, that not all Christians supported slavery. We know from history that not all Christians supported discrimination. Many Christians opposed slavery. The abolitionist movement contained many Christians. Many Christians were marching for the civil rights movement in the late 50s and the early to mid 60s. So it's very inaccurate to just paint all of Christians with that broad brush that all of them were wrong at that time. But more to the point, the question I would raise is, if people have been wrong in the past, does that mean they cannot be right in the present? Because if that's the case, nobody can ever be right. Segments of the church have been wrong in the past. Not all of the church, segments of the church. But all that tells us is that we have the capacity to be wrong. Well, okay, I get that. We do. The question becomes, though, on this issue, are we wrong? We have to look at the issue itself, not the fact that someone was wrong about other issues in the past. And the issues are not similar. People who believe that one race is inferior to another are racist. Christians today do not believe homosexuals are inferior to heterosexuals. We object to the homosexual act. Hank, in the average Bible-believing church, if someone says, I am homosexual in my desires, but I do not act on those desires, I seek to live a holy life, most churches would say, well, welcome, brother. Join the rest of us who struggle with whatever sinful tendencies we have, and we seek to live obedient lives. Now, racists never made such a distinction. Racists never said to African Americans, well, if you're African American in your race, that's okay as long as you never commit an African American act. Whoever said that? Racists wanted separation from racial minorities. They wanted separate drinking fountains, separate theaters, separate accommodations. Nobody today is asking for that. Christians today, no matter how conservative, are not asking for separate drinking fountains for homosexuals and heterosexuals, different theaters, different restrooms. That's nonsense. We are only saying there is an act we object to as being immoral and outside of God's will. And that's a far cry from the racist who said that you as a person in your entirety are inferior to me. It's a very poor comparison.
A lot of people will say, Joe, the very fact that you're bringing this up means that you have a phobia about it because you're not bringing up adultery and a lot of other things. You're so fixated on this homosexual thing. How do you respond?
I would say that to point out that something is wrong is not to be fixated on it at the expense of other things, number one. And number two, I would point out, in all fairness, we are not being pressured today, Hank, to legitimize adultery or fornication or even pornography, although the practice of using porn is very widespread. The Church of Jesus Christ today is not being asked to revise its position on these other sexual matters. We are being primarily asked to revise our position on homosexuality. And that's specifically why I felt the need to write a book on that topic. If we were being pressured to revise our position on adultery or fornication, I certainly would have written a book on either of those topics as well.
And not a better book on the subject than Speaking of Homosexuality, Discussing the Issues with Kindness and Clarity. It's absolutely fantastic. I read it again this weekend and thought, wow, this is a well-written book. It's accessible. I love the talking points at the end of every chapter. They give you a real handle on the material. Again, available for those who support the ministry. Check it out on the web at equip.org. This is the end of our fiscal year. If anything you can do, if you have some of the Lord's money, invest it in this ministry as the Lord leads you. It would be deeply appreciated, used for God's glory and for the extension of His kingdom. Right back with more Joe Dallas.
When militant secularists are willing to do more for their misguided and morally bankrupt notions than Christians are for a faith that once transformed the world, you don't need to be clairvoyant to imagine the potential outcome. Stem the tide and stand with the Christian Research Institute during the month of June. Simply call 888-7000-CRI. 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches or visit equip.org. Hank Hanegraaff will be back after this. Bertrand Russell famously said, "Most people would rather die than think, and many of them do." Not so with CRI support team members. Support team members are not only serious thinkers, but their membership in CRI's support team helps to equip hundreds of thousands of fellow believers around the globe each and every month. Are you not a member? Then you're missing out. Not only do support team members form the backbone of Christian Research Institute's outreaches, but they enjoy their selection of resources from our Equipping Essentials library and receive a complimentary subscription to CRI's award-winning Christian Research Journal. Just two of the benefits of membership. To discover how you can make a difference 24/7 in equipping believers at home and abroad to stand for life and truth, check out the benefits of membership at equip.org. Has God spoken? Are the words of Scripture merely human in origin, or are they in fact the very words of God Himself? 3 years in the making and based on two decades of research and reflection, Hank Hanegraaff's monumental book, Has God Spoken?, answers what is surely the most important question facing our world. In Has God Spoken? Memorable Proofs of the Bible's Divine Inspiration, Hank counters the contentions of the Bible attackers and clearly shows that belief in the Holy Scriptures is not a guess or wishful thinking. It is the only logical conclusion after an honest examination of overwhelming evidence. Order Has God Spoken from the Christian Research Institute by calling 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. Equip.org. In today's culture, it seems that if you're a liberal, anything you say is protected. But if you're a conservative, anything you say is hateful. At the heart of this cultural divide is the issue of homosexuality and the increasing demands of the gay rights movement. The gay rights movement has evolved from a plea for tolerance to a demand for not only approval, but retribution. In his books, Speaking of Homosexuality and When Homosexuality Hits Home, author, speaker, and counselor Joe Dallas brings his wisdom and experience to these sensitive issues in a deep and eminently practical way. To receive either Speaking of Homosexuality or When Homosexuality Hits Home as our thanks for your gift, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches or visit us at equip.org. www.bibleanswerman.org. Now back to the Bible Answer Man broadcast and your host, Hank Hanegraaff.
Talking to Joe Dallas today, his book, Speaking of Homosexuality, discussing the issue with kindness and clarity. It is available for those who support the ministry. Check it out on the web at equip.org. There are those that would say, Joe, that Jesus never mentioned homosexuality, and yet you wrote a whole book on it. What gives?
Yes, well, I have often responded to that by first pointing out that Jesus did in Matthew 19 reiterate the Creator's original intention for the sexual and marital union when he said, "Don't you know that he who created them from the beginning created them male and female? For this cause a man shall leave his father, cleave to his wife, the two will become one flesh. What God's joined together, let no one set asunder." Now, we have chipped away at that definition, haven't we, for decades. It was a union defined as permanent. What God has joined together, let no one set asunder. That's been chipped away at. It's been defined as monogamous. They will become one flesh, an independent unit. That's been chipped away at. We saw in the 70s the swingers movement that introduced polygamy as a lifestyle. And now we're chipping away at the male-female definition of it. However, Hank, besides all of that, I should point out that while we don't know for sure that in his earthly ministry Jesus did not mention homosexuality, after all, the Gospels don't record everything he said, so he very well could have publicly commented on it, and we don't have a record of it. But it's significant to me, if he did not mention it, that that alone is a very powerful argument against it, because he knew he was speaking largely to multitudes of people who held to the law of Moses. And Jesus was nothing if not a radical when it came to overturning people's misconceptions. If they had misconceptions about the law or misconceptions about life, he very plainly would challenge those misconceptions. Now, he had a perfect opportunity when he spoke, if he approved of homosexuality, to challenge the misconception that homosexuality was a sin. He could simply have said, "You have heard it said, thou shalt not lie with a man as with a woman, it's an abomination. But I say unto you that two men who love each other deeply can form a union, and it's a marriage." He had ample opportunity to say that. And being God, he surely knew for how many centuries people would misinterpret the Bible into thinking that homosexuality was a sin, if indeed it was not. And so he would have had that opportunity to correct that misconception if it was a misconception. Why didn't he? Because, of course, it was not a misconception. If he was silent on the subject, his silence confirmed the traditional position.
Talk about the consequences of marriage redefinition. I think a lot of people have already become numb to this. It's no big deal. It's been around for a while. What's your problem? Talk about the implications.
Well, the proof of the success of redefinition, Hank, lies in the fact that when you compare the redefinition of marriage to the literal redefinition of biology according to subjectivity in the life of a child, same-sex marriage is looking kind of tame. I mean, it's already largely lost its shock value because we're no longer arguing about homosexuality. Now we're arguing about whether or not children can change sex and whether or not grown anatomical males should be allowed to walk right into the public restrooms designated for females. So I think that one of the obvious results of redefinition is it has opened the floodgates to even more extreme redefinitions. But this, again, is the price a culture pays for social experimentation. We tried a social experiment back in the 70s with no-fault divorce, and all the experts seemed to say it's the humane thing to do. It's not nice to make people stay in marriages they're unhappy in. So let's redefine marriage as no longer being a permanent covenant. And nobody will be hurt. The kids will be fine. Now, 3+ decades later, we're all kind of saying, oops. But, of course, that horse is out of the barn. Now we again engaged on a massive social experiment solidified by the Supreme Court's 2015 decision to greenlight the redefinition of marriage. We're already reaping a whirlwind, both in the floodgates of confusion opening about gender issues, because you'll notice right in the aftermath of the redefinition of marriage, when it was sanctioned by the Supreme Court, that is when we began these large public debates over transgender people, whether or not laws should compel the average citizen to recognize that if a person says he is a woman or she is a male, we must comply with their self-perception, and whether or not it's appropriate for children to be allowed that self-identification, and whether or not Christian organizations should have sanctions placed on them if they do not comply with this redefinition. So we have the one major consequence of social confusion, massive social confusion. We have the other consequence of a growing hostility towards the Bible-believing church, a hostility expressed in more and more government reach into the life of the church to dictate to Christian organizations and businesses how they may or may not define marriage and how they may or may not define something as basic as male versus female.
Would you conceive it even possible that this book could not be published next year or in a few years?
Oh, Hank, that's a distinct possibility. The public right now is being taught and largely convinced that those who hold a traditional view are bigots, and bigots must be silenced because they are destructive and they are dangerous. And so if the public can be convinced that it is bigotry to hold a traditional view, and then if lawmakers can be persuaded to pass laws against expressing such views, and if an appointed Supreme Court is largely in favor politically with the viewpoints of the more liberal party, what's to stop that kind of silencing? All you have to do is basically convince the public that it is hateful and dangerous to say you believe marriage is strictly a heterosexual union and that the sex you're born in is the sex you will always be. Convince the public that that is hurtful to people, and the public will basically say, okay, then silence those hateful people. And that is what we're facing as a church today, Hank. We really are.
Many of the things that I say on the Bible Answer Man broadcast are thought to be far too controversial in Canada, and therefore they're blocked. I can't talk about these things in England. There are major radio stations there that want the broadcast, but only if I will curtail my speaking and eliminate some of these issues.
Well, I'm afraid we're going to be seeing more of this, Hank. A lot of people say that Christians will be persecuted just because we claim to be Christians. I don't think it's that simple. If you claim to believe in Jesus Christ, and that's the extent of your doctrinal clarity, I think you'll get along just fine in this culture. But if you hold to Christian distinctives about the nature of God, the exclusivity of Christ as the only way to God, the existence of hell, the fallen nature of humanity, and the definition of the family, those are the Christian distinctives that will get you in trouble. So I don't believe it's just those who identify as believers who will suffer from censoring and silencing and lawsuits and any number of punitive measures. It'll be those of us who hold to these distinctives.
Joe, I want to ask you a final question. There are so many people who probably have the idea, look, this is a ship that's passed. We cannot win this debate. Why bother with it?
We continue to speak truth as stewards of truth, first and foremost, because we're commissioned as ambassadors to do so. Hank, when you and I stand before the judgment seat of Christ, God is not going to ask us how many people believed us. He's going to ask us how faithfully we stewarded the truth he commissioned us with. Secondly, let's never forget that whatever laws may be passed, whatever direction the culture may go, there will always be people who respond both to the gospel of Jesus Christ and to the revealed truth of God in Scripture. This is true, for example, of the abortion argument. Now, there's a ship which passed 30-plus years ago, yet nobody is saying, let's stop speaking out against the killing of the unborn just because the culture has sanctioned the killing of the unborn, because it remains wrong. So let's not modulate our approach to truth by how well it's being received. Let's recognize that ambassadors are commissioned to steward the message of the one who sent them, regardless of the environment or the response which comes from the environment.
Joe, thanks for joining us on the broadcast and for writing this book. I know it's going to bless a lot of people and make a difference.
Thanks so much for having me, Hank. Always a pleasure talking with you.
Joe Dallas, again, the book, Speaking of Homosexuality, discussing the issues with kindness and with clarity, both are needed. We need to understand this issue. We need to be able to reach as opposed to repel. And all of us need to recognize that there, but for the grace of God, go I, and I too am a sinner. It is only the foreign righteousness of Jesus Christ that allows me to go into the presence of our Lord. We're out of time for this edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Thanks for standing with us, shoulder to shoulder, in the battle for life and truth.
Thank you for joining us today. June is one of the most important months for the Bible Answer Man broadcast. That's because we close out another financial year, and we can do so successfully only if listening friends like you stand with us prayerfully and financially. With your gift, you'll help CRI impact even more lives with God's truth. Please call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI, or simply visit online at equip.org. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is funded solely by listeners like you. We're on the air because life and truth matter. Anyone who's been paying attention knows there's a war going on, not just on traditional morality, civility, and decency, but even more fundamentally on historic notions of truth. And the enemy isn't just the onslaught of fake news facilitated by a post-truth culture and turbocharged by growing legions of ideological spin doctors. No, the real enemies of truth range from postmodernist convictions that there is no objective truth to militant scientism that claims that only science can determine truth, and religion is little more than primitive superstitions. But CRI support team members are not waving a white flag of surrender. They're holding the fort by undergirding every one of Christian Research Institute's mind-shaping and life-changing outreaches 24/7. To learn how you can make a difference and enjoy all the benefits of support team membership, simply visit equip.org.